Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from June 3rd to June 9th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So this week we had the Scaling Ethereum conference in Toronto, I think it was, which is pretty cool. There's a bunch of videos up there. I linked them in the newsletter. It was basically a bunch of people got together and discussed how we're going to scale Ethereum, you know, everywhere from layer two to layer one, like ETH one, ETH two, the whole kind of thing. I've managed to watch a fair bit of the videos myself on YouTube. There's replays there. And it, you know, makes me quite bullish. Like, there is a lot of thought going into a lot of the kind of open questions within Ethereum, like especially stuff like how we're going to migrate from Ethereum 1.0 to 2.0. Vitalik gave a really great presentation on that during the talks. So highly recommend checking that out. But yeah, it was just really exciting to see that this just kind of came out of nowhere. I think the last 2 or 3 months I saw that it got organized and managed to get a lot of key people together in the same room. So, you know, I put out a tweet that's saying, like, I came up with a new drinking game that instead of taking a shot, you buy some ETH every time you get goosebumps from a Scaling Ethereum video. And I did. I actually bought some more ETH after watching those videos. I just got really, really kind of bullish for some reason. But yeah, that's not investment advice, by the way. I didn't buy too much. I just had some money lying around in Coinbase. So I thought, why not? But yeah, did you get to watch any of the videos yet, Eric?
I haven't. I've been traveling a lot personally on the weekend, so I've been a little bit behind on stuff, admittedly. But I was following. I was following some of your tweets about it, and then just kind of in general stuff on Twitter. But it seemed like the lineup's very heavy hitter. So I'm hoping. I think they had some streaming issues at some point one of the days, but I don't know if the videos are out there yet, or if you know they are. But definitely plan on catching up on these this week, because it seemed to be something that. Well, first of all, I'd be very interested in watching, but very important talks, right? Like, kind of everybody that's interested in scaling seem to be there, and definitely something I want to catch up on.
Yeah, I do recommend checking them out. The talks were pretty important. There was some new stuff in there, especially around the migration. There was that was probably my favorite talk around the migration from ETH 1 to ETH 2, because that's been an open question and something that a lot of people are a bit concerned about. Obviously, we're all wondering how dApps are going to migrate across. And Vitalik had, like, I think 5 different proposals. And he basically went through a scale of what's, you know, what makes sense, what doesn't, you know, the trade-offs of each one, and then kind of landed in the middle. So I don't have them off. I don't know them off the top of my head, each of the proposals. But if you go to the videos, you'll be able to find them. I think there's timestamps in the description as well for each talk, which is cool.
Yeah, it's great to have videos for this stuff. It's like so much easier to go back and reference and like talk about than, you know, than being buried in like ETH research posts and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine this was an ETH research post or something, or maybe a Ethereum magician post or something like that. But yeah, video is just a very nice format for these sorts of things. And the second thing I just wanted to mention before jumping into the news was that you put out a tweet this week saying that Moloch was looking for someone to complete the Ethereum Mixer spec that Vitalik released a few weeks ago. And I saw on Twitter today, actually, that you're working with Argent, the mobile wallet developer, on this. Do you have any more details for us on this one?
Yeah, so put that out. Actually got a decent amount of interest kind of spread across multiple Moloch members, people that reached out. It looks like maybe we even have like a Telegram chat getting going for it. But yeah, the Argent team reached out to me 2 days ago. Looks like they're already building. It's on GitHub if people want to check it out. It's under their GitHub, which is Argent Labs, and it's called Hopper. And they describe it as an open source mixer for mobile-friendly private transactions on Ethereum. It allows the private transfer of value from one Ethereum account to another via an iOS client, and it uses zero knowledge proof. So basically, you can deposit, you know, an Ether into the Mixer smart contract, and then you could withdraw it later into a different account by providing a zero knowledge proof. So on the surface, it seems like kind of exactly what we're looking for, right? So I know their work says it's based on some of at Barry Whitehead and at Harry R, which are some people that have been working on, you know, trustless and private transactions on Ethereum. So definitely looks promising. It'll be interesting to see, you know, there's a lot of people with strong opinions around privacy and kind of the best solution and how we can get it down gas price wise. So I haven't looked in hard to the logistics of that yet. I think I saw one of their steps that said to use a gas limit of 1 million gas. So I'm not sure how optimized the gas is yet, but heck, anything, you know, it seems like a great start. I know that team's extremely talented. So maybe we're going to kind of run across this solution sooner rather than later, which would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be really, like, really huge. Like, we've already got, obviously, JP Morgan and EY working on these kind of enterprise grade security, privacy, you know, kind of and security specs coming out as well. But this one from Vitalik would be like a quick and dirty kind of fix, I think, with a mixer. So it'd be really cool to get this developed. And I'm glad that there are developers already kind of working on this. All right, moving into the news. Now, we have talked about the Facebook stablecoin so much that, you know, we sound like a broken record at this point probably. But we need to talk about it this week because there is actually a lot of news that came out. It's quite funny. It's not going to be called Global Coin anymore. It's going to be called something else. I don't know if they actually announced the name. It's still called Project Libra. I don't know if the coin's going to be called Libra or something like that. But there was a bunch of details released. And we're going to pretty much know everything about it, I think, on June 18th, because that's when the white paper is going to be released. So for me, that's 7 days from now. But I guess like that's 8 days from now for me because it's June 18th, probably in the American time. but yeah, so hopefully on next week's podcast, we'll be discussing the white paper. I think if I look at the date here, yeah, I think it should sync up. We'll see. But yeah, so there was a couple of other details that came out about this as well. Apparently, Facebook's looking to charge $10 million to run a node for 100 nodes total, which is quite insane. $1 billion worth of node infrastructure that they kind of license out to maybe different companies. I don't know who's going to be spending $10 million to become a node. I don't know what type of revenue they're going to get from being a node. Maybe they get issued some kind of, you know, meta token that sits on top of the stable coin that Facebook's issuing, or maybe Facebook kind of gives them a bit of the profit sharing from the fees they take from the stable coin or the advertisements that they use or something. I'm not sure. I mean, of course, this is speculation. But they also announced that they plan to partner with merchants to accept the payment, you know, in its native stablecoin, which kind of like is pretty obvious, I guess. They plan to also add physical crypto ATMs to exchange local currencies for their stablecoin. And this is interesting to me because it feels like Facebook isn't just creating this stablecoin to be used within just solely within their apps, but they also want it to become a kind of money of sorts for like even real life transactions, especially if they're integrating with different merchants. Like, I can imagine Facebook, you know, it kind of begs the question, is a company is going to be issuing their own sovereign currency outside of government control, pegged to the US dollar at the start, but maybe eventually it gets pegged to a basket of goods or something like that. I know that's something that MakerDAO wanted to do originally with DAI, was peg it to a basket of goods as well. So this is like kind of taking a macro look at things, I guess. And, you know, it gets kind of funky when you think about it. Private companies issuing their own currencies that are borderless and open and, you know, transparent and decentralized. I'm assuming, you know, maybe it's not decentralized because it's Facebook just running the nodes or a consortium of companies running the nodes. But yeah, so I'm so confused and I'm a bit excited to hear what this is all about, actually. So yeah, June 18th is D-Day, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad they're not calling it Global Coin. I think we kind of thought that was maybe a placeholder name or something someone grabbed onto and thought that was the name. But it sounds like it's not, because that just sounded pretty ridiculous. I kind of had a realization about this the other day, and I guess I'll put a little bit different spin on why I've turned bullish on this. It's not because of like the actual Facebook coin and like, you know, 100 nodes, 10 million. So let's talk about a plutocracy, right? You got to have $10 million to run a node, and there's only 100 of them. So, you know, it's not decentralized, but that's also not what Facebook's like fully going for, right? I guess 100 nodes is way better than like the Binance DEX, which has like 3 or something like that, quote unquote DEX, right? So that's not too bad. But actually, what I'm getting excited about here is I think they're going to lead the way on regulation, right? So it's funny. Like smaller projects, let's say like a Maker, right? people are kind of terrified of regulators. And then you see Facebook come around and they're like, oh, hey, we're just going to launch this. Hey, we're even going to put ATMs out there to exchange USD for our crypto. Like, are you kidding me? Like, if a smaller Ethereum project tried that, they'd be so terrified of the US regulators. But because Facebook has so much money, so much lawyers, so much connections, you know, to government officials, they've probably already like vetted this. So I'm getting bullish on the idea of Facebook leading on the regulatory front here, right? So they've got all the resources that they could possibly have at their disposal, I'm sure, as far as that goes. And they've obviously been in the news as far as legal issues recently. So they've got all those bridges. Now, hopefully we kind of see some guidance. And, you know, if Facebook's able to put crypto ATMs across the US and across the world to exchange fiat for their coin, you know, other companies should feel more comfortable to do that for theirs, right? And not just on ATMs and stuff, but just in general, like, you know, people are worried about like money transmitter licenses and all this stuff. So hopefully this is kind of an awakening moment for crypto and regulations.
Yeah, I think they actually spoke to the CFTC. I think I saw something about that, speaking of regulators. They spoke to the CFTC about how their stablecoin is going to be treated. But yeah, it's interesting you bring up the regulatory environment there. I know that something, as you said, like MakerDAO is, I mean, I wouldn't say scared of regulators, but they are definitely cautious. And, you know, they've got legal counsel and everything. And even Compound Protocol recently hired Jake Chavinsky as their general counsel. So yeah, I think that, I mean, as much as we like the idea of DeFi, decentralized finance and all these things, as long as there's centralized companies behind them and building on them and kind of, I guess, running the show, they're going to run into regulatory hurdles and they're going to want to be cautious, which is fair enough. And I think this is why even something like MakerDAO, the team's pushing really hard to decentralize this and to kind of get it out of their hands and for it to be community run. It's a big task, of course. Like, we know how kind of hard it is to do governance in crypto, let alone on-chain governance, you know, with voter apathy and plutocracy concerns and all those sorts of things. But I think, you know, if we think of other protocols like Uniswap that are just contracts that have been deployed to Ethereum and can work without the front end. So anyone can build a front end for Uniswap and anyone can interact with the smart contracts. Hayden Adams doesn't have any control over that. He can't shut down the contracts. They're there forever. The only way the contracts could be removed is if the, you know, 51% of Ethereum miners colluded to remove the contracts or whatever. So yeah, I think we're going to be seeing that happen a lot more across the DeFi board, this kind of decentralization of the protocols once they're considered feature complete. Because, you know, if they don't, then they're just going to run into so many regulatory hurdles. Like, there's no guidance on this sort of stuff. The SEC says, you know, one thing, CFTC says another. Like, they all kind of regulate different areas of, you know, of the financial system. But it's just, it feels like they're sitting on their hands a lot of the time and just waiting to see how it plays out. So I'm curious to see how Facebook has managed to get around this. I think it's literally just going to be because they've centralized a lot of it and, you know, they're not issuing something that, where there's an expectation of profit, because obviously a stable coin, you know, is supposed to just be pegged to a stable asset such as the US dollar. So I doubt that they're going to be considered a security or anything like that. But yeah, you know, another week we'll know everything about it, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess it's still a stable coin, so it's not like too innovative on that front yet. But you know, I know, like you had mentioned, even the Maker team in the past, I think, has been worried about just the legality around issuing a stable coin. Of course, is a bit different than taking in USD and just holding it in a bank account and issuing a token, right? But you know, just in general, it's another company throwing a lot of money behind the idea of crypto and blockchain and add it to the list of JP Morgan, EY, and all these, you know, the company list is getting quite impressive. So definitely interested to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I think, I guess with Maker, yeah, it's a stable coin, but the MKR token might be considered a security, right? I think that's why Maker is erring on the side of caution. And I think that's why the MKR token may not have been listed on a few exchanges. But you know, it's a weird space to be. And I'm not trying to single out any projects, but definitely projects that have issued tokens where there's an expectation of profit, they're probably going to be targeted the most. I mean, we've already seen that they've been targeted the most. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's totally unjustified, but I just wish the SEC would give a lot more guidance around this and basically say, you know, when you issue a token in this way, we're going to consider a security, so don't do that, or blah, 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 blah. But I guess that's just the legal system, right? It takes a lot to move. It takes a long time to move it. It takes a long time to change anything. And that's by design at the end of the day. All right, on to project updates for the week. Now, I got really excited this week because Starkware and 0x released the first demo of the StarkDex exchange. Now, for those who don't know, StarkDex is supposed to be a improvement kind of to the 0x's decentralized exchange, where they use zero knowledge proofs to kind of batch transactions it basically brings scalability to decentralized exchanges on Ethereum. Now, the StarkDex has been deployed to the Robston testnet for now, and it boasts a system max capacity of 8,000 batch transactions per block, which equals 550 transactions per second. Now, that's insane because at the moment, Ethereum caps out at what? I think like anywhere from 5 to 13 or 14 transactions per second, depending if the miners raise the gas limit or whatever. It's not much, right? And StarkDex is claiming to be able to do 550 transactions per second on Ethereum today without any changes to the protocol, just using their zero knowledge proofs. And they also claim that it's 200 times cheaper in terms of gas costs too. So as we've discussed before, the main concern about these kind of zero knowledge privacy technology is the gas cost, because they obviously cost more to be computed on the network. And we've discussed how there's an EIP coming in Istanbul that will reduce these gas costs, or hopefully coming in Istanbul. I got corrected the other day for putting an N in Istanbul. It's Istanbul. I think I'm saying it right. But yeah, so we've got this EIP coming that will reduce the gas costs even further. So I think a lot of people, I saw a lot of excitement about this, but I don't think people are kind of realizing how bullish this actually is for kind of Ethereum in general. Decentralized exchanges, like such as 0x, ones that are kind of based on order books, not just peer-to-peer or something like Uniswap, they basically can compete with centralized exchanges once we get this scalability in. And there is no good reason for you to use a centralized exchange once we have the scalability for decentralized exchanges in and there's liquidity there as well. Like, obviously, liquidity we've spoken about in the past is a huge problem, but that's because the scalability is not there yet. So once the scalability is there, once we have private transactions as well, which is just, you know, even better, and we have the liquidity, then no one's going to use a centralized exchange. Like, why would you? Especially with all the hacks that happen all the time, even something like Binance got hacked, right? Some considered it to be kind of the unhackable exchange, or you know, CZ runs such a tight ship that it can't be hacked. And, you know, fair enough. It's a good exchange. It, you know, in terms of technology, it works pretty well. I've never had an issue with it myself. But yeah, so I think that having this tech deployed and having people be in custody of their own assets is going to be extremely attractive to them once we have that scalability and privacy in place. So yeah, very bullish for, I think, 0x, because they're working directly with 0x. Maybe not, I don't know about the token. Like, I don't know if the token's going to go up or anything. I use the word bullish in terms of for the project itself and seeing success across the board, because as we've seen traditionally, 0x has been struggling to get volume into their platform. But as I said, I'm pretty confident it's because of the fact that it's currently not very scalable and there's not, you know, privacy there. So I think the liquidity will come with the scalability.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I fully agree with everything you said. Like I've mentioned a few times in the past, I still think the next wave of DeFi is going to be on the decentralized exchange side. We have lending and borrowing out there, and we have all the infrastructure and exchanges set up for DEXs, but like you said, we just don't have the volume yet. And there's a good reason for that. It's way too costly and cumbersome to kind of use decentralized exchanges. So we lack liquidity, and that just kind of, it all snowballs from there, right? So yeah, if you can start doing 8,000 transactions per block, which is 550 transactions per second, and they also, the gas costs are so low. I believe the blog post said like 200 times cheaper in terms of gas costs when you kind of like compare it to how you use 0x today, because of how the batching works. So they have a demo up if people haven't seen this yet. It shows you like the blocks on Robson, and right now they're just running it at 10 trades per second, but like the blog post mentioned, it can go as high as 550. So StarkDex.io, you can kind of see the trades going through, and they have a cool visual of like kind of how it all works. But yeah, I mean, this is a huge breakthrough. It's an alpha. It sounds like near the end of the year, hopefully it can be, out there for real users to use. I guess that would be a beta at that point. I'm sure first they're going to move this demo over to mainnet maybe, and then they'll probably have like a closed beta and then like more of an open where you can start trading. But yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, once you get speed, and the interesting thing here is, of course, Starkware is focused on privacy too, and like these use zero knowledge proof, so you get privacy along with this as well. Then the liquidity is going to start to show up on these decentralized exchanges. I think we're really close to a breakthrough here. I mean, we're seeing like different types of decentralized exchanges pop up, and now like 0x has a quote unquote competitor in Loopring, and yeah, you're seeing all these different like auction DEXs. I'm sure they're going to all start to use technology like this, right? Because this is, I mean, as far as I can understand, this is pretty plug and play technology for other people that want to use it, because it's, I think most of it's open source. I believe a small part of Starkware is closed source. I would have to check into that and look. But one question I have here, and I want to dig into a little bit further, is I know they talk about on the 0x project blog, kind of how it works under the hood. And the prover contract for the zero knowledge proofs is run by Starkware. So I guess the one thing I want to look into a little bit is, I know one of the things with zero knowledge proofs to date is like they can be a bit centralized. And since Starkware is running this prover contract by themselves, does that mean there's a bit of centralization here? I honestly don't know the answer to that. I'm sure this is, if so, it's more for the alpha, but like, are people going to have to run their own like prover nodes or whatever? And again, a lot of this zero knowledge proof stuff's black magic to me still. So definitely something I want to look into, because I know I've heard that concern in the past and reading the blog post, they're the one running the service. So something I want to still dive into a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that you're probably right. There is going to be some centralized aspects of StarkDex, at least as part of their alpha and probably their beta as well. Simply because it's still very early days for this sort of stuff. This is bleeding edge research and development into you know, these zero knowledge technologies, and especially applying them to blockchains. You know, Starkware actually received a $4 million grant from the Ethereum Foundation to work on this stuff. And I'm pretty sure Vitalik's also a personal investor. So I think the technology is sound. They've got the confidence of a lot of, you know, important people within the ecosystem. It's just developing and researching this stuff and getting it deployed. And I think they're actually making incredible progress, considering how, I think, you know, innovative this stuff is and how many things that they have to consider and work with. Like, they're constrained, but I guess, by the Ethereum 1.0 chain at the moment, considering that it's not scalable on its own. But given that Ethereum has a Turing complete language, you can do fancy stuff like this. So yeah, I think we'll get that eventually it'll be a fully decentralized system. I definitely think that's a goal that they want to achieve, because without that, it kind of, I guess, it's not pointless, but it's not, you know, the true vision of what we want out of kind of Ethereum and DeFi in general.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess even as is now, it would be, you know, it's not like you still have control of your funds, right? Which matters the most. It's just like the verification of the proofs, which is, you know, just right before kind of the trade executes and all that stuff. So it's still a minor aspect. And I know their vision, because we had them on the podcast, right? Their vision is definitely to fully decentralize the stuff. But it's so hard to like keep up with all the development. Like, we're seeing a lot of development on zero knowledge proofs, right? I think it's time for me, at least, to do a lot more kind of a refresher and more of a deep dive into how this stuff works, because, you know, we were just talking about the mixer and now we're talking about StarkDex. And I think it seems like zero knowledge proofs and like these ZK rollups, this is going to be the way we scale the main chain in the near future. So definitely time to kind of start diving deeper into understanding how all this stuff works.
Yeah, I think I remember reading like an Explain Like I'm 5 blog post about zero knowledge proofs, and I kind of got it. Like, it was a bit, it took me a couple of reads to get it. But traditionally, with a lot of this other stuff that I've been trying to research, there's a lot of mathematical notation, and I suck at maths. Like, I'm really bad at it. You know, I don't think I'm going to be able to read that and get what it's saying. So maybe there's some other stuff out there that breaks this down into English. Maybe we should have an Ethub page about this, actually, because yeah, you're right. There's a lot of zero knowledge stuff coming out, and we talk about it a lot. And a lot of people on Twitter talk about it, but unless you're like a dev right into the weeds of it, you're not going to really understand how it works under the hood. You're just going to know that everyone's really hyped about it and everyone really wants it to, you know, to integrate it into Ethereum, but you don't know why. So yeah, hopefully there's something that we find. If I do find anything, I will include it in the newsletter next week for sure.
Yeah, we should find a podcast guest that can explain it very well. That would be a perfect episode, actually.
Very true. I'm going to leave that to you. Cool. All right. Next dev update. So Rocket Pool. Now, I think we've spoken about Rocket Pool once in the past. But anyway, just a refresher. Rocket Pool is this kind of decentralized staking protocol for Ethereum. They've been around for quite a while. I think, you know, a couple years now. And they've kind of been trying to play catch up, I guess, with Ethereum 2.0 and how staking has evolved. I'm pretty sure they were around since before the Casper FFG and sharding were actually merged, which is obviously quite a huge change for the protocol itself. But they've been chugging along and they've been trying to find kind of the best fit for them and the best way forward for their protocol. This week they gave a few updates around what they've been working on and their beta and things like that, and how that's going. And they also detailed a new concept that they're thinking about. Because as we know in Ethereum 2.0 at the start, in phase zero in the Beacon Chain, the ETH that you actually stake is locked for now. I mean, this it's still kind of ambiguous at the moment because we don't know if there's going to be a two-way bridge yet. People are still chatting about that. So we don't know if it's actually locked or we don't know if it's going to be a separate ticker or anything like that. But the Rocket Pool guys have come up with a solution where they'll... When you, if you stake your ETH through kind of Rocket Pool, they'll issue you what's called an RETH token. So I guess a Rocket ETH token that kind of acts as a representation of your ETH in the staking contract and as like a claim to that ETH in the staking contract. So this, I mean, for those of you a bit cluey, this sounds a lot like Compound C tokens that we talked about on the podcast recently, where you obviously in Compound, you deposit like your DAI in there and then you take out CDAI and that CDAI is a claim on the assets in Compound. It's the same kind of concept here. So I think this is really cool. Like, I mean, we're only going to see more of this, right? These kind of token representations within the protocols themselves that can be freely traded on something like Uniswap or any other decentralized exchange. This week we actually saw the CDAI ETH pair on Uniswap kind of moon. It's like hundreds of thousands of dollars in there, I think, at the moment in the liquidity pool pretty quickly. So that's pretty cool to see already. And you know, that's literally trading a claim on assets in Compound. Like, it's just money Legos, right? Shout out to David Hoffman for his money Legos slogan. I love that because I just started seeing it everywhere once I heard him say it. Like, we traditionally referred to it as composability and interoperability, but money Legos just sounds cooler. So I'm going to just call it money Legos from now on.
Yeah, like you said, Rocket Pool has been around for a while. I guess they're just kind of in a waiting pattern until phase zero. I'm sure they're going to throw a big party once phase zero goes live since they've been around a couple of years but haven't actually been able to capitalize on their product. It definitely seems like, you know, it's an ambitious product. I know they're backed by Consensus as well, I believe. I think they first came around like early 2017, so they've kind of been waiting for this to happen for a while. I do think it's going to be pretty popular. I don't know them specifically, right? Because who knows once stuff goes live and what competitors pop up and like how their product is. I don't know how well built out their smart contracts are to this stage and stuff like that. But the minimum is going to be 32 Ether. A lot of people don't have 32 Ether, right? So you're going to go to a staking service like this to do that. And even honestly, I think if you have like 32, 64, a little bit more, you might still do it just for the ease of not having to run your own node and being worried about it going offline, even though the slashing conditions aren't that bad anymore. But it might be easier for you to just like join a service that already has it going. You might lose like a little bit of interest because I'm sure they'll take a little bit of a fee, but I do think these services will be popular. And last we talked, I know Rocket Pool is doing this in like a decentralized manner through smart contracts. So it's not like a ton of Ether just going to be sitting in one account that could potentially be hacked or something like that, which would be disastrous for a proof of stake network. So, you know, hopefully they do it right. I did see on their site now they have like, they're going to offer, you can just like stake your Ether. So you can stake your Ether for a fixed term of 3, 6, or 12 months and earn interest on it. And then they also I hadn't seen this on their site in the past, but now they have stake and run your own node. So they must be offering some type of help around running your own node or some type of node service as well, which is very interesting. So not only would you just send in your Ether, but you could actually run your own node, which will help, help the network out as well, because we're going to still need that. There's going to be Beacon Chain nodes and then validators, and definitely need people to run those nodes. So, yeah, I guess it's hard to say. Like, it seems like a good project. They have a good team. They're backed by good teams. very ambitious, but hopefully it, once staking goes live, they prove to take off, and it'll be interesting. I'm sure there's going to be competitors that pop up, right? And like staking as a service competitors, there's like a, anywhere there's going to be money to be made, which it's definitely going to be a lot of money to be made off like taking small cuts for services off of staking. We're going to see other teams pop up, but I haven't seen any, maybe you're aware of some, Anthony, but I haven't seen any direct competitors pop up just yet.
No, I haven't seen any competitors yet, but I have seen a lot of these kind of staking services pop up, but they're, you know, the centralized ones, right? Because we're seeing a lot of staking chains go live at the moment, such as Atom and like Cosmos and Tezos and a few others popping up where, you know, these centralized services say, hey, you know, stake through us. We'll handle it, all the hard parts for you. We'll take a cut, of course. And then, you know, you can earn your interest or, you know, your rewards basically. But in terms of a decentralized stack or protocol for this sort of thing, I don't think I've seen anything myself. And, you know, I guess maybe that's got to do with the fact that things aren't final yet and a lot of things are changing. I'm actually impressed that the Rocket Pool team has stuck at this and been really heads down building throughout this whole time, considering how much the ETH2 spec has changed, especially the staking aspect. Like, as you said, they've been around since, I think, early 2017. ETH 2.0 has pretty much changed completely since then. Like, we had the merging, of course, of the sharding and staking contracts, specs and things like that. And then it just keeps changing. Like, I remember the client devs, ETH 2 client devs, were saying that the spec's changing literally every day. So, you know, we struggle with this a bit too for ETH Hub, like when to write pages for things, because things just change every day. So, you know, the overhead of keeping it up to date is just too much for us. But I'm just really glad that Rocket Pool has stuck to it. And, you know, they've got some stats on their website that I was just seeing about their beta. So they've had like over 200 users and 500 mini pools spun up, over 18,000 Ether staked and over 71,000 node check-ins. So it's actually getting some use even in beta, right? They're actually getting, I think they have a strong community, because I remember they issued a Rocket Pool token as well back in 2017, raised a bit of money too, which was quite cool. I think it was only like $1 million or $2 million back then, which is, you know, quite conservative for an ICO back in 2017. So I think they've got a little community going, which is really good to see, because I think that's what you need for these kind of these protocols, that kind of grassroots effort.
Yeah, you mentioned the token. That'll be an interesting aspect of this. So they did issue the RPL token, and in kind of preparing for this, I was reading a blog post that they had put out a while back that was kind of explaining the protocol, and I didn't quite understand the use of the RPL token. It's something about like self-regulating the network of node operators. So I guess, like I was mentioning, if you want to run a node, you kind of get hooked into their network. I don't know like how a token can adjust the capacity to match demand. I'm sure there's some economics behind that, but you know, I don't know if this is absolutely required to use the network, because like we've seen in the past, like a token that adds friction but little value can be detrimental for your users, right? So it'll definitely be, and I'm not saying that's going to happen with this token, but it's definitely a possibility, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with that token as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about tokens in the past and how these different tokens fit into different protocols, and how sometimes protocols will issue a token and they'll realize later that the token doesn't really fit into the ecosystem, but they can't just abandon it. So they try to find ways to kind of, I wouldn't go as far as shoehorn it in, but try to like make it fit, you know, and sometimes it's better to just give up on the token if we're being totally honest about things, but you know, it is what it is. Maybe they will, you know, different projects will eventually. We've seen a lot of the tokenless projects actually take off, you know, Uniswap, Compound, Dharma, you know, things like Set Protocol as well, kind of growing. So I think the tokenless era for these kind of projects will naturally happen during maybe more so during bear markets, when it's kind of a lot less tempting to raise money for a token, or it kind of the well dries up and there's no money being sloshed around to just give you $100 million for some token or whatever. But, you know, not to say that everyone that raised money in 2017 is scammy. A lot of the good projects on Ethereum that raise money for tokens are actually delivering, you know, heaps of good stuff and kept building all through the bear market, haven't tried to exit scam or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, when people fall into, well, teams fall into that group, I'm sympathetic, and I don't hold any grudges or anything against them for, you know, maybe issuing a token that didn't need to be issued. But I do wish some of the teams would, if they need to, they would abandon the token, just because it would probably be better for everyone involved. But there's obvious reasons as to why they can't do that, of course. But maybe they buy back the token one day when they become a profitable company, burn them all and get rid of them. I don't know. There's multiple ways you could do it. But for now, I don't think we'll see any company abandon their token, especially when they have treasuries that are denominated in their, where they have tokens in their treasury as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think what you just said is, we're a little off topic here, but a very key point and something I've come to realize too. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these projects probably didn't need a token. And I know people are upset that the values fell a lot from the peaks and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, they helped fund a lot of teams that are still building on Ethereum. Like you said, built through the bear market, have produced a lot of good work, open source work that other teams are using and people can use going forward. And, you know, it kind of kept the lights on, in all honesty, as far as development work went in 2017 and 2018, right? We're recovering a little bit now. But I've personally just kind of come to realize that a lot of these tokens were more like dev fundraising tokens than anything that allowed teams to keep going. I would have been scared to see like what would have happened in 2018 if we didn't have some of these ICOs where teams had no money. Like, there wouldn't have been many people, and definitely not many teams, building stuff for Ethereum, and that could have got a bit scary. So, you know, I know we talk about tokens a lot and people in general talk about tokens a lot, but I do think that's a very important point. It's funny, I just pulled up Rocket Pool's token on CoinMarketCap. I'm like, oh wow, it's up 38% today, but that's on $83 of trading volume.
Oh, yeah, the classic low liquidity tokens on CoinMarketCap. I love seeing those. Cool. All right. Last thing I wanted to mention was Uniswap put out a tweet this week about a bunch of improvements to Uniswap. As we've discussed in the past, Uniswap raised some money, about $1 million. They hired a couple of devs, which is really cool to see. So now they're heads down fixing a lot of things with the Uniswap front end. So basically, they fixed all of their known outstanding bugs, which is awesome. If you're a dev, you know how important that is and how much that means. They've added slippage warnings to prevent people from trading badly. Now, I guess the arbitrages are going to be quite disappointed in this, because a lot of people make a fair bit of money off arbing the kind of spreads on Uniswap, considering that a lot of noobs use it and they don't understand that the slippage they can cause for putting in an order that's too big for maybe the pool's liquidity. There's better account flow. You can click to see inverted exchange rate, switch between pages using arrow keys, and the site loads faster. So, you know, it's great to see these improvements come, you know, pretty quickly after Uniswap was able to raise money and get more devs on board. I'm really looking forward to what Hayden and his team is going to deliver going forward. I know that they want to deliver a kind of oracle, a pretty hard and decentralized oracle. So I think that's what's going to be their main focus going forward. But it's good to see that they're working on the protocol already, you know, and improving it already. I hope to see it exit kind of beta. It still says, you know, this product is in beta, use at your own risk. I hope to see it kind of enter a full kind of live production mode soon.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Uniswap team just keeps chugging along and crushing it. I mean, I guess one of the beauties of their product is, you know, this isn't undermining by any means, but it's very simple, right? Like, it's a pretty straightforward concept, and the website couldn't be more simple, really, right? Just a couple, like, three buttons and a couple input boxes. So, you know, I'm sure it's nice they can just now kind of keep perfecting their product, and I'm sure they have more features and different additions on the roadmap too, but it seems like they're kind of perfecting their product as is today. And yeah, I think the biggest one here for me definitely is the slippage warning, because I remember when Maker was kind of pumping against ETH, and, you know, everyone was just kind of like buying on Uniswap, but you would see that people would like buy and like, you know, get like 20% slippage because the liquidity pool was low. And then everyone thought that Maker was just going to the moon. I think it hit like 5 ratio against ETH, which it was. But if you actually kind of like looked at the liquidity pool, it was very small. Like, the second someone wanted to make a decent size exit, it was going to crash down to like 4 on the ratio, which is a, you know, 20% drop. And that ended up happening. But it's definitely important to understand like how the pools work. And, you know, it's fairly hard to make extremely large trades like you would be able to on like Coinbase Pro or something like that on Uniswap, even though the pools are growing. So this is just good to help people understand exactly kind of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that as well. I think just in general, a lot of people don't realize that liquidity for a lot of these tokens is quite bare. You know, just because something has maybe decent volume on CoinMarketCap, wherever you're looking at the volume, doesn't mean it has a lot of liquidity. It could have just been some trader trying to pump the price, or someone dumping and clearing the order book or things like that. So definitely like that Uniswap has integrated this to save kind of newbie traders from losing money. All right, moving on. DeFi Pulse integrated a couple of new features this week. One that I really love is that they now have a metric for total value locked in ETH. So before they only had total value locked in US dollar. So obviously when the price of ETH or the relevant token or kind of BTC was going up, it would look like the total locked in these protocols were going up. But now that we have total value locked in Ether, we can actually see, you know, regardless of price, how much ETH is being locked up in these protocols. So, you know, I just wanted to give a quick shout out there because DeFi Pulse has become one of my favorite websites to use for tracking these sorts of things. I guess it was kind of born out of Mike McDonald's original ETH locked in DeFi GitHub page. And then the guys over at the Concourse Open community put together DeFi Pulse. So it's just DeFiPulse.com. For those of you who haven't visited it yet, it's a great website for tracking basically various DeFi metrics. And I know that the teams are adding more metrics as days go by. So definitely keep an eye out on that.
Yeah, this is something I've wanted here for a while. There's a lot of heated debate on Twitter about like what the proper metric is here. I personally like Ether locked in DeFi more, so I'm glad they added this because, yes, total value in USD is important, but really it's just kind of a measure of like Ether price movements. We're up 500 million locked in DeFi. We were 400 million last week. That's amazing. Well, not really. Like Ether price just went up 25% or whatever. So, I mean, yes, people are keeping the value there, so that is good. But in reality, a lot of this is probably locked in trading positions. So it just means that they have more collateral and they're not as underwater on their trades as they would have been if it went down, right? So seeing Ether locked in DeFi to me means that we're taking actual supply out of Ethereum, right? Which is, to me, one of the most bullish indicators you can have, right? So as DeFi grows and as staking kind of comes online, hopefully we can get, you know, somewhere near, I don't know, 25% of total Ether taken out of supply, locked in those two things in the first year, something like that. So glad they added this, and it's an awesome site. It's basically like becoming like the go-to for DeFi and like measurements. They've added a lot of cool graphs, and they're pretty much adding new projects by the day. And I of course like seeing that Lightning Network's eighth on the list, and there's stuff like even like Nuo Network and Uniswap have now passed Lightning Network in total value locked, which is good to see if you're an Ethereum bull.
I like that little jab at Lightning Network there. I was wondering if you were gonna say that.
Hey, I was gonna throw one in here and there just to get the trolls on your back.
yeah, for sure, totally. Anyway, moving on from that, I think. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was the Maker team put out a report this week called DAI in Numbers. Now, I really like this report. I think DAI is considered the best way to kind of track how, I guess, DeFi is doing in general, because if DAI is growing, I think DeFi is growing, as we've seen. Obviously, we've seen a lot of lending and borrowing for DAI recently. We've seen MakerDAO grow tremendously throughout 2018. The growth has kind of petered off in 2019 due to the stability fee kind of shenanigans that went on there. I mean, shenanigans is probably the wrong word, but all the stability fee stuff that happened to try and get DAI back to $1, which succeeded, by the way. So, you know, it did what it needed to do. But yeah, so this report basically said that there's almost 15,000 unique addresses holding non-trivial amounts of DAI. So I think the cutoff was about $100 worth of DAI for that. And they've seen 20% monthly growth for DAI each month for the last few months, and $325 million dollars in originations as well. So this is just really cool. This is really bullish. Like, they had a tree map on there basically saying that basically showing the 235,000 DAI transfers in May alone, and it shows kind of like where these transfers are happening. So number one's obviously ETH to DAI, which is the main place to kind of sell ETH for DAI or sell DAI for ETH or whatever. It's the main decentralized exchange that replaced Oasis DEX. Second and third were Kyber and Uniswap, and then you have a bunch of other decentralized exchanges like Bancor, DDEX, and 0x. And then you also had the kind of lending and borrowing platforms like Nuo, Compound, Dharma, and DYDX, actually. DYDX has actually been growing rapidly the last few weeks since they relaunched their platform, and they're making a bit of noise on Twitter as well. So, yeah, as I said, DAI is probably the best kind of, best thing to track to kind of see what's happening in the DeFi space.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not stopping by any means. And you mentioned the Maker team, but Max Bronstein actually had the tweet thread, right? And he's at Dharma, and they've been doing a lot of talk about DAI and stuff because they recently launched it on their platform for borrowing and lending. I think when he put this out, you could lend DAI for like 14%, although they just lowered their rates. I think DAI is down to like 11 now, and USDC is down to 8%. Just kind of based on supply and demand, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's really cool. We're obviously both like data geeks and love seeing this stuff as related to DeFi. And there's like so much, like we were just talking about DeFi Pulse, and people are starting to put a lot of cool tools and research out around DeFi. And this is just kind of adding one to the list.
Cool. So that's everything for this week. Thank you everyone for listening. If you don't subscribe to the newsletter, of course, go to ethhub.substack.com. Go to the podcast.ethub.io to subscribe to the podcast, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.